Our next presenter is Megan Lindley. She's an epidemiologist with the Immunization Services Division at the Centers for Disease Control. And she received her MPH in Health Policy and Administration from Yale University. And she's going to present on student immunization requirements of U.S. Health professional schools. All right, let's welcome Megan, please.
Okay, and before I get started, I want to acknowledge the contributions of my co-authors, several of whom are in this room today. And also to say that if any of the questions that we asked on this survey sound familiar, it's because Luta and her colleagues very kindly let us use their survey as a basis for ours, for which we're also very grateful. It's not interesting. So, well, it's interesting to someone, but not me. So coverage for recommended vaccines among U.S. healthcare personnel, HCP, is unknown or suboptimal, particularly for influenza. I think most people know that the influenza coverage is about 45% and has remained in that area for some time. And many of the other vaccines that we would recommend for healthcare personnel, I don't think are commonly assessed. And we thought that the immunization policies of schools training HCP may impact their future vaccine uptake or status, both by the health professionals themselves and by them recommending it to their patients. So the objective of our study was to characterize student immunization requirements and related policies of health professional schools in the United States and Puerto Rico. So we surveyed all medical, baccalaureate, nursing, and osteopathic medical schools in the United States and Puerto Rico, and that was 760 schools. We emailed an invitation to participate in a self-administered web-based survey, and we reached out to those schools by using the membership lists of three national organizations, the Association of American Medical Colleges, the American Association of Colleges of Nursing, and the American Association of Colleges of Osteopathic Medicine. And depending on which college, which group we sent it to, the survey was generally completed by deans of the school, student affairs deans, or student health nurses. In our survey, we collected some demographic information about the schools, including the region of the country, whether the school is public or private, an estimate of the size of the program based on their entering class size, and the number of years that they had admitted students, because for particularly for nursing programs, they tend to arise. So there are programs that are actually very, very new, haven't been around for as long as some other more established programs. We also asked questions similar to Luta's survey about the deadline for students to comply with immunization requirements and the consequences of non-compliance. We asked about which national guidelines or organizations inform the school's immunization policy, how often the vaccination policy is reviewed, and who the responsible party or parties are for that review. Our main finding, we asked vaccinations required for entering students, and we did ask that these be requirements that are specific to health professional students. Sometimes those were the same as for the college in general, sometimes they weren't. We looked at what types of proof of immunity were acceptable for required immunizations and what types of exemptions were allowed, if any. And then we asked if the school provided influenza vaccine to their health professional students, if they did, how they advertised it to students, and again, if they did, how and if they tracked the vaccines that they gave. So we fielded our survey from November 2008 to January 2009, and initially we had a really low response rate, about 44%. So we followed up schools that were completely non-responsive and schools that had begun but not completed the survey with phone calls and individual emails. We made a minimum of two attempts to reach every non-responding or partially responding school via telephone. And we continued that follow-up through early March, and we ultimately attained a 74% response rate, so I think our significant efforts on that front were rewarded. The analysis I'm going to show you, we calculated some basic frequencies. We looked at differences in vaccination requirements for entering students by region, school type, any of those three health professional school types, the public-private status of the school, and the size of the entering class. And we compared the requirements to the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, or ACIP, recommendations for vaccination of healthcare personnel. So as I mentioned, we had a 74% response rate, 561 schools, and you can see the response rates were high in all groups, but varied slightly between the medical, nursing, and osteopathic medical schools. And just to keep in mind the ends for these, we're looking at 98 medical schools, 440 nursing schools, by far the largest part of our survey, and then 23 osteopathic medical schools. And this analysis is restricted to 558 schools that reported that they did have a policy requiring vaccines for entering students. There were three nursing schools that said they didn't have a policy and didn't plan to implement one, and I would need to look at this, but it's likely that those were very new programs, although they may have had other reasons. Before I begin talking about this, I just want to remind you these are very preliminary data, and so the percentages you see here are not going to add to 100%, both because we had so much data that I'm presenting only the most common two or three responses, and because a lot of times we allowed people to give an other response and specify, and we haven't had time to go back through and back code those responses. But this should give you a pretty good overview of what we found. So looking at the first part of the slide, the deadline for compliance, you can see nursing schools were significantly more likely to have the deadline for compliance be prior to clinical work, rather than the medical and osteopathic medical schools, which generally tended to require compliance a little bit earlier before classes start. The consequences of non-compliance cannot register for class, as I think Luto alluded to. That was a little more popular, again, among the medical and osteopathic medical students, schools, than the nursing schools. And the most popular response, of course, was cannot begin clinical work. And it's not presented on this slide, but fewer than 5% of schools said there is no consequence. So they all do tend to enforce this in some way. For the exemptions allowed, as you would expect, the medical exemption was the most commonly allowed, and this is, we did assess it for every different vaccine, but I'm only showing you overall, so this means medical exemption allowed for any of the vaccines required. And it was about 80% for medical and nursing, and actually only about 61%, so significantly less among the osteopathic medical schools. And then religious and personal belief exemptions were somewhat less commonly offered. The vast majority of the schools, all three types of schools, said that they review their vaccination policy annually. And the guidelines influencing the policy, I found this very interesting. I'll skip to the second line since Luto was already talking about the American College Health Association recommendations. You can see that's only about a third of the nursing and medical schools, and the osteopathic schools didn't tend to report that as a big influence on their immunization policy. The ACIP recommendations for healthcare personnel vaccination, 60% of the nursing schools, 91% of the medical schools, and 72% of the osteopathic medical schools cited that as an influence on their policy. And then the factor that was most important, or most commonly cited overall for what immunizations are required, is which immunizations are required by the sites where students do their clinical rotations. So that was 81% for the nurses. So for them, that was the most popular response. For the medical schools, it was 60%. So they actually were most likely to follow the ACIP recommendations. And it's a little closer for the osteopathic medical schools. It was 70% versus 74% for the ACIP recommendations. And then looking at who monitors the guidelines, the dean of students was a popular answer for the medical and osteopathic medical students, whereas the program dean was the most popular answer for nursing schools. And I think we found also when we were sending out the survey that for the nursing schools, it tended to be the dean of the program who was responding. So just a little bit different division of duties there. And then the student health director or student health services staff were also in charge of monitoring changes in these guidelines up here that we assessed. This slide, I'm not going to walk through the entire thing because it's obviously a lot of data. I would just want to show you the measles, mumps, rubella, hepatitis B, all required in the mid to high 90s, and no differences among any types of schools. So pretty much everybody is following these requirements. And I should remind you, these are the vaccines that are required for, recommended for healthcare personnel by ACIP. When you get down to varicella, it's also pretty frequently required. The medical schools were actually significantly more likely to report that they required varicella vaccine than the other two types of schools. But again, it was still 89 and 83% of schools requiring it. We asked about TD and Tdap separately, and then we also produced a result for having either TD or Tdap requirement, which are pretty consistent. I was actually pleasantly surprised that the Tdap requirements were pretty close to the TD requirements, considering that it's a more recently recommended vaccine. And again, those are required in the majority of schools, although not as high as these vaccines. So the big outlier here I have highlighted in yellow is influenza vaccine. Fewer than 20% of any of the types of schools require influenza vaccine for their health professional students. And although they don't require it, we did ask, do they provide it to their students? So starting at the top, 70% of medical schools do provide influenza vaccine to their students at no cost. And I should tell you, this was asked about the 2007-2008 influenza season. The nursing and osteopathic medical, it was only about 30%. And then skipping down to the bottom, 18% of nursing schools, 13% of osteopathic medical schools, and only 3% of medical schools didn't offer the influenza vaccine at all. This question was asked of those schools at the bottom that didn't offer the vaccine, why not? And I do want to point out that this represents three schools, and this also represents three schools, so we're talking about very, very small numbers in this group. But for the nursing schools, they were most likely to say that we don't offer it because it's the student's responsibility to seek influenza vaccine if they want it. And that was 75%. And that was also what the osteopathic medical schools, who didn't offer the vaccine, reported. And one of the medical schools did say that, but their most common response was that it's too expensive for them to offer the influenza vaccine. And then back down here, this was asked only of the schools that do offer the vaccine. And we said, if you offer it to your students, do you track the vaccinations given? And fewer than half of any of them actually tracked the vaccine. Those that did track, the nursing schools were most likely to use a paper medical record. Only about 30% of them used a school database, and fewer than a quarter an electronic medical record. The medical schools were a little less likely to use a paper medical record, a little more likely to use an electronic medical record, and the osteopathic schools were the ones that were most likely to use a school-wide database. So this is the bivariate analysis that, for the most part, I didn't show you in that data. This, I think, is a little different than what Luta was reporting for Kentucky. We actually didn't find any significant differences in vaccines required based on public-private status. We did find the hepatitis B vaccine was a little less likely to be required in the Northeast versus all other regions. Would have to look into that a little more. I'm not sure what that finding is about. There were some small differences in requirements by entering class size for the smallest schools, which had classes of under 100 versus the medium-sized schools. I think that's probably an artifact of multiple comparisons because it wasn't a consistent difference across all the school sizes. But again, we'll have to look into that more. And then, as I noted, the osteopathic medical schools were less likely to report offering medical exemptions, and the deadline for compliance with vaccination requirements was significantly later at nursing schools than at medical or osteopathic medical schools. So this study is, to our knowledge, the first national description of immunization policies at baccalaureate nursing and osteopathic medical schools, and the first description of these policies at medical schools since 1990. Since we know the recommendations have changed since 1990, we're very excited to have it. As I pointed out, nursing schools are more likely to wait until clinical work begins to enforce their immunization requirements. And on the one hand, the clinical work is the point of exposure to patients, so that makes sense, and clinical work may begin earlier in health professional studies than it has in the past. However, I think Luta alluded to a really important point, which is that if these students are living in communal environments, they still have plenty of opportunities to infect each other, even if they're not exposed to patients at that time. And the greatest influence on requirements, on vaccination requirements for entering students, is the policies of the institutions where their clinical rotations are performed. And we don't really know about the extent to which these institutional requirements reflect ACIP recommendations for healthcare personnel, which I think would be our ideal to have them follow. But it's also important to note that those ACIP recommendations are a very important source of information for school policies, particularly for the medical schools. And for the most part, the vaccination requirements at all types of health professional schools surveyed are consistent with the ACIP recommendations for healthcare personnel, and the requirements for TD and Tdap are very similar. The glaring, however, in that statement is that influenza vaccine is not usually required for students. The majority of medical schools do offer the vaccine at no cost, but others don't. And the schools that don't offer it are perceiving that obtaining the vaccine is the student's responsibility. So I think it seems as though policies like that may not be teaching the importance of annual influenza vaccine, which may have an impact on why our rates for influenza vaccination in practicing healthcare personnel are so low. The limitations of our survey, our respondents may not be representative of all schools, and we will be able to look a little bit at the demographics of the non-responding schools, but we did attain a high response rate after follow-up. There's some ambiguity in the question about which vaccines are required for students. What we did was create a table that listed the vaccines and then listed proofs of immunity. And one of the possible responses was no proof of immunity required. And looking at the results, it seems as if this may have been interpreted as vaccine not required. So what I presented to you actually does not include no proof of immunity required. So it's a conservative estimate of what vaccine schools are requiring. And it's self-reported data. The immunization policies, especially for larger schools, are frequently available online, but we did not go back and compare these data to what the schools reported. So we hope that the data gathered by the survey will serve as a basis for future actions to improve healthcare personnel immunization rates, particularly for influenza. We would encourage schools to require annual influenza for vaccination for health professional students to begin creating good habits, and to increase tracking of vaccination in electronic databases, particularly for influenza, which would allow schools to more easily assess coverage in their students. And actually could also be useful if there are outbreaks to see who your vulnerable students are. And further research is needed on vaccination policies at other types of allied health professional schools. And I do want to acknowledge the contributions of all of these people, without who I'm absolutely confident this study would not have been done. So, thank you.
Whichever you think is best. Go ahead.
All right. Do we have some questions for Megan?
I just had one about the hepatitis B series. For the ones that said they required the hepatitis B, do they have to be complete with the series, or do they do any kind of a conditional, as long as they've started the first, you know, was there a breakdown between being complete or being as up to date as possible? Do you know?
That's a very good question, and unfortunately the way we asked it, we didn't actually ask for a number of doses required. It was simply, do you require this vaccine? So we're not able to assess whether they require even beginning the series or that the series be completed, but that's a great point.
I'm Linda Ori, and I teach public health at Creighton University School of Pharmacy, and I'd like to just offer pharmacy as the other profession that probably is a little unique in that most of our students are interacting with patients by their first year of practice, because many of them are working in pharmacies. I think this is just a great beginning for this kind of research. But I personally would like to ask if you're willing to work with other groups like us. I'd be very interested in expanding this research to our pharmacy schools and colleges around the country.
Well, I know that in particular, one of my co-authors, Dr. Ray Strickus, will be very excited to hear that because we decided, given the large number of different kinds of health professionals, that we would have to break down the survey into pieces. And so we started with these groups, but there are also pharmacies is definitely next on the list, and also some other different types of nursing degrees beyond the baccalaureate degree. And I think if we repeated this survey, we would also want to ask, when does clinical work begin, in addition to asking if that's the cutoff point for compliance?
Any other questions?
Hi, Marie-Michelle Léger from the American Academy of Physician Assistants. And you actually took my question, because I was going to ask about other health professionals. There's about 5,000 PAs that are graduated every year. And that would be another pool of candidates that you may want to look at. There's about 142 training programs. I can tell you that AAPA policies state that all students must be immunized per ACIP immunizations policies for healthcare workers. Whether or not the institutions, all 142 do or don't, we don't know. So it would be good to find out.
Thank you. Yeah, and as I said, we really couldn't have done this survey without the participation of the school groups that I mentioned. So it's very encouraging for us to hear from the pharmaceutical, the physician assistants, and I think medical assistants we would want to add there too.
I had a thought while I was watching, and it didn't occur to me earlier that I guess you didn't, but I was just going to suggest that maybe on a future survey, you could also survey whether or not they're teaching vaccine policy at these same institutions, because wouldn't they be the same people you'd contact? So I don't know. And I assume you didn't, but...
No, we didn't, but that's a good point. That's another thing that might encourage health professionals to both take the vaccines and offer them to their patients.
Any other questions? All right, great. Thank you, Megan.